Welcome to the Mite Bomb Beekeeping Podcast. This is Bruce Rodriguez. Today I have another new type of episode. It seems like every time I'm doing something different, but if you're hearing me on this one, that you must either be a subscriber, and I thank you for that, or you could have found out about it some other way. But either way, thanks for being here. I won't be sharing this one on too many places, maybe just my Facebook page, and you'll find out why in a little while. Let me give you a little background about this episode. About 2 weeks ago or so, today's March 26th, so this is on March 12th. I got together with a couple buddies of mine. We had the idea to get together and just do a little chat on my humble little podcast here. So I called up my buddy Solomon Parker and my other friend Mitch Baker, and we got together, and we've talked a million times in person, online, all the time. We're all really good with each other, have free-flowing conversations, so I figured a podcast is going to be really easy. We're just going to hit record and just have a great time. And we did have a great time. But your host here kind of kept losing track of what the heck we were talking about. Bombing jokes. We all bombed a couple jokes there, so I wasn't the only one. But yeah, I just wanted to give you this little heads up. This isn't really too much of a bee episode. We talk about bees, and subject changes a lot, but a few things went wrong. I got cut off in the middle. There was a 10-minute gap of just dead air while I was trying to get back on. It was a big mess. And also, embarrassingly, somewhere, I don't know where, about the 30-minute mark or something, I just kind of just blank my brain. I just totally blank out. I don't know what to talk about, and I just come right out and say it. And it actually turns out to be kind of the funniest part, and then we get more comfortable after that. But this episode, it just isn't a nice, perfect, clean podcast like all the other ones. There's some language there, mostly me getting frustrated for not being a good conversation carrier. Let's see, what else was I missing in here? Oh, so when at the beginning, it just cuts right in. Just cuts right into me and Mitch. Well, Mitch and Solomon talking as I join the conversation. And towards the end, after all the bumbles and fumbles and just goofs during this whole recording, I start to talk about how I need to edit this thing and it's going to take forever. And Solomon has the idea to just say, just leave it all in there. Just leave it in there. Who cares? And I thought, you know what? I am going to do that. I've never heard a podcast where they just leave everything in. And that's what I did for this one. The only thing I cut out was dead air in the middle, because that was just stupid. But I left every single thing in here. So this is basically a behind the scenes look or listen to what goes on if you're kind of a new person trying to do a podcast and trying to record and trying to keep the conversation going with nothing taken out. It's just three dudes talking about bees most of the time and just busting each other's butt other times. But if you're looking for something really informational about bees and splitting and things like that, I wouldn't blame you if you just want to not listen to this one and don't feel any pressure to share this or tell everybody about it. This is just for me and my kind of dedicated listeners. Hopefully you get a kick out of it. We're all locked in anyway, just about. We're all probably gonna die, so what the hell? Who cares? Here it is. I'm just gonna cut right to a little music, and you're gonna be welcome to my world of doing this stuff. And I'll see you on the next one.
We're not going to be talking about how to do splits and, you know.
Yeah. Clean rearing. I just didn't know if there was like a main topic or anything that was.
check.
I still hear you.
All right. Everything's rolling on my end.
All right. If I screw up this introduction, I'll just redo that. I can redo that. All right. Welcome back to the Mite Bomb Beekeeping Podcast. This is Bruce Rodriguez, and today I have Solomon Parker with me and also Mitch Baker. Solomon Parker is the founder of Treatment Free Beekeeping Group on Facebook, and also he has the Treatment Free Beekeeping Podcast on Podbean. And Mitch is a local buddy of mine, past president of our beekeeping club. And if you want to hear any background about him, he has an episode on the Treatment Free Beekeeping Podcast. You can head over there and just scroll down to, what was it, Relaxed Management Beekeeping? Solomon, I believe it was.
It's a slightly different title, but it's basically that idea.
There you go.
Let me check.
So, yeah. Well, the one thing I was hoping to bring up today, since I have Solomon here, you know, an experienced podcaster and speaker and you know, YouTube video maker, you gave me a little bit of feedback on my last episode called Really Megan, where I may have come across as anti-science or anti-PhD or something like that, anti-education. And I just wanted to clear up that I am absolutely not against education, science, anything like that. My issue, which I may not have, you know, expressed very well in that episode, is just when someone who did a lot of schooling, got some, you know, master's degree in science, that doesn't really make them a good spokesman for selective breeding on a small scale for survival, at least what I've heard. Did it come through like I was trying to say that at all, or how did I screw that up?
I wouldn't say that you said it necessarily directly. I just wanted to make sure it was known that you and I and we all are not anti-science. We're very pro-science, and just wanted to make that clear.
Yeah, I believe some of the speakers on the circuit, the doctors, some of their subjects are internal parasites of stink bugs. I'm not making that up. And then Megan Milbrath was human epidemiology. There's definitely science. Just you know, I'd like to hear from an evolutionary biologist, and there's not too many of those going around talking that much about bees, without constantly thinking about the commercial aspect of it and the monetary aspect of it. So hopefully that's cleared up there.
And like with any topic, you know, science can be harnessed to further an end, any end. You know, you can use it to prove whatever you want. So ultimately, we're looking for pure science, objective science, not science that is harnessed to further the chemical mindset.
Yeah, a while ago, I was going to say a while ago, I was browsing around websites and stuff like that, and there was actually a website that had an entire sample size of a particular study, and it showed you how you could prioritize certain criteria in the study or specify certain things as outliers to what you were looking at, and it would completely change the outcome of the study, whether it was for one thing or against the other, with this exact same data set within it. So that was super interesting. And it goes to show what you were saying, Solomon, that it you can modify whatever you want to kind of point to the outcome that you're looking for.
Yeah, I think I noticed that with some of Randy Oliver's, some of his charts. The middle would be all kind of up and down, but then he would have one far on the left that had, say, zero mites or something, and that was called an outlier, and or a couple of them. Then there was ones far on the right that were completely loaded down, and he just stuck with the ones that kind of fit what he was talking about. So, yeah, I've definitely seen that.
Have you guys ever read the book Outliers?
I have not.
Oh, man, that sounds familiar.
It was a pretty popular book by Malcolm Gladwell. Came out about,
okay,
I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago.
I think I read that one of his books, but I don't think it was that one. It was I forget what it is now.
Well, the basic idea is that it's about the outliers in our society. Speaking of humans, you know, the Bill Gateses, the Mark Zuckerbergs, the you know, the people who become president, the people who become billionaires, especially Oprah, and what it kind of takes to get there. And it takes a lot of not just skill and work, but also luck. And you know, I kind of apply it a little bit to the world of beekeeping, because you know, it's those outliers that a lot of people try to breed from and try to recreate. But in the beekeeping world, with the way that beekeeping genetics works, a lot of times those outliers are truly mutations. They're not something that can be reproduced. They're just something that happens in the population statistically. So, you know, what we're working with as treatment-free beekeepers is bees that survive, do okay, do well, and a few of those outliers also. But we can chase those outliers forever. We're never really going to catch them.
Yeah, I think what bugged me about that one was on the one yard that had, I don't know, 100, 200 colonies, how can you have one that doesn't have mites? If, as I keep saying 1,000 times, and I'll say it again, is how can you have a colony with no mites in it if mite bombs are a thing? They should be bombing all the colonies. So the other problem that I had with that paper was just all the emotions getting tied up in things, and the sadness and the looking into the compound eyes and getting sad. I don't know. I don't have the cold, shriveled heart that was spoken of, but I don't see sadness. You know, when I see a lion take down a, you know, whatever, a gazelle or something, it's a little sad, but that's how things are.
I'm like,
the lion's got to eat too.
Take that, you slow bastard.
Yeah, the next one, you know, we'll get away. But yeah, so I had a lot of issues with that paper there. And then just looking at my situation, I was thinking about on the drive home. I just came home from a beekeeping meeting. I thought it was going to be a beekeeping meeting. It turned out to be a beginner class, which is fine, but it was kind of sad in there. It was everybody there, almost none of them had bees yet, and they were already pretty worried about mites already. They don't even have bees yet. And the speaker, you know, I guess just it was just textbook beginning beekeeping, but he really downplayed the possibility of catching swarms. It was just like, it's like playing the lottery. You're probably not going to get swarms. Well, I found out later it's because he's bringing in 400 packages for sale. You know, and it's really not like the lottery, because conservatively you should be able to catch a swarm in, say, 1 out of 3 or 4 traps. You know, for me, that's about my average. But some people are catching 100% of their swarm traps. It's nothing like the lottery. I do hear that a lot. It's like the lottery, you have to spend actual money, and your chances are one in millions or hundreds of thousands.
It's probably more like poker. Like, if you have the right strategy and the right skill set and you're doing it the right way, your odds, there's still luck involved, but your odds go way up.
Right. Yeah. So, I don't like when they call it a lottery. It's not like a lottery. I wish lottery was like swarm catching, because I'd probably blow all my money on it.
It's like fishing.
Well, like, I've said, I don't know if I've said to you, Solomon, but I know in discussions with you, Bruce, I've said that when I started out beekeeping, I was doing all the research and everything like that, and I'm looking at Nosema and tracheal mites and all this other stuff, and I actually, I had a hesitation on whether this was going to be for me, because I didn't want to get into all that. I was thinking this was just going to be like a fun side hobby. And then when I had found Bruce and found the treatment-free Facebook group and stuff like that, that was when I was, okay, I can ignore all of that and this is possible. And then when I got into it and realized I didn't have to buy packages, Bruce was helping me catch swarms and learn how to do all that and everything, I went whole hog. I didn't care if something died, because that was taking it out. It was taking out the weak genetics. And I also had things that lived, and they were not the things that I expected. They were not the big giant hives. So, like, being able to look into it and be like, well, no one treats for tracheal mites anymore. Nosema is not really a thing if your hive is healthy. You know, the wax moth isn't really a thing if your hive is healthy and guarding their entrance and stuff like that. It allowed me to push the Varroa completely aside and be like, if they're healthy and they're equipped to deal with it, they'll deal with it. And if not, I have empty equipment to multiply the ones that do.
Yeah. At this meeting, I had to leave early just so I could make it home in time so we could all get together. But he was just getting ready to get to the part where he was going to run through all the treatments. And at the beginning of the class, he asked, does anybody in here have bees? And I just raised my hand a little bit, thinking he wasn't going to see it, but he saw it. And he's like, oh, you got bees? I said, yeah, you know, I have this many. And he, oh, okay. And I was just thinking that when he got to the treatment part, he was going to say, so what do you use? And and I'm not going to lie. I didn't care who was there. I'm going to say, you know, what's going on. But yeah, I had to leave. I missed that part.
You tell him you have like 18 bajillion hives?
No, what I actually do have about now still alive is about 52, 53 or so. That's all what I said. And you know, a good number died, but I know the first thing a treating beekeeper will say is, oh, you should have done this or that to save those. But what they always seem to forget is, come springtime, I'm going to turn those survivors into over 100 very quickly. So I never actually went down or had a loss or anything like that. So I don't look at it as how many lived. I could have taken quite a bit more loss than that. I would have been happy with it, but I'll deal with it, you know, and have a ton of bees. And that's without even a single swarm catch yet.
Right.
It's easy. It's so easy. So what kind of things are going on in your two guys' bee lives? You got any plans to learn anything or do anything different this spring, this season coming up? Mitch?
Well,
put
I
all
mean,
the pressure on you.
Well, mine is actually pretty easy. I mean, I know I've kind of told you about what happened last year. But my personal life got in the way of everything last year. I don't think that I went into my hives more than twice early on in the year. And then they all went to two or three medium boxes and I just left them alone. I didn't have time to even look at them. And I had four at my house and three are still flying right now. So, I mean, that's pretty good. And I didn't do anything last year. I just kind of forgot about them and I had too much other stuff to deal with. So this year I'm kind of looking at moving on to maybe actually trying to actively engage with my bees. And, yeah, man,
I missed you last season. You weren't around that much at all.
I was not. 2019 sucked as a year for me, but so far 2020 is going great. So,
yeah, it's going to be an early spring, hopefully. And when the swarms start popping here, it's just nonstop every day, all of April and May.
I got lots of pollen going in all three hives. They're flying as soon as the temperature starts getting into the high 40s. So they're all three of them were here. All three of them were just two mediums. They went through winter and two mediums. And they came out solid. So
cool. How about you, Solomon?
Any
topics that have been bugging you?
I think generally I'll just let Mitch go first, and then I'll make some snide remarks. But I had a pretty cruddy 2019. Also broke my back.
Oh yeah,
it sucked. Sorry if you hear noise from my mouth. I'm sucking on a cough drop, and I'm getting over a cold and whatnot. Everybody keeps teasing me about coronavirus, and I'm like,
oh man. You had to date this episode.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay.
It's not like it's going away anytime soon.
It's like March 12th.
Currently, outside, we're having some great weather. It is currently 67 degrees outside, and it has been mostly nice for the past several weeks. I've been working outside almost every day in short sleeves, and the bees are waking up. They're bringing in plenty of pollen. Right now we have available plenty of daffodils and willows, and I think maples. As far as what I'm trying to do this year, I had some plans. I'm again trying to split up as much as I can. I'm busy doing a bunch of other things. I'm kind of behind on swarm traps. You know, in a normal year, 2 years ago, I had like 30 or 20, 25, 27 swarm traps stacked up in my garage ready to go right now. But this year I've been trying to build a greenhouse so I can have a decent garden this year. And I still have a lot of my swarm traps put together, so I could just open them up and put a new lure in them and be ready to go. But yeah, so the idea now that I've bought a place and I have my own property now, my idea is to build up a good sustainable size apiary here at home, and then try to start expanding out. I always try to do something new this year. Did I tell you guys what I was going to do this year?
Today? I don't remember. No. Tell us.
Well, I'm sure somebody knows. I don't. I'm honestly, I have totally lost the plot right now.
Hey, this isn't your everyday podcast. I don't care. We talk about whatever. And rag on people, rag on me.
I always love a good banter podcast.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me started on podcasts. I'm sick of them anymore. Except for yours. I like yours, and a couple other ones are okay.
I appreciate that. I listen to a lot of podcasts, so, you know.
I didn't think you did.
Well, I was listening to something the other day. I think it was a story about how many people listen to podcasts. And They said like 4% of people consider themselves avid podcast listeners, which is like 2 hours a day. And I'm like listening like 6 or 7 hours a day. So
yeah, but not beekeeping podcasts, right?
I don't listen to any beekeeping podcasts other than yours.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Or you don't really like to read too many beekeeping books or watch videos that much.
I generally don't read any beekeeping books or watch any beekeeping videos. I'm in that stage in my life where I want to be the creator rather than the consumer. And it's not like there aren't a lot of people out there that have good things to say. You know, I'm not in any sort of competition with anybody else's podcast. You want to listen to somebody else's podcast? Go right ahead. You can listen to mine and theirs and all of them that you want to. It doesn't bother me at all.
No, me neither. I definitely, I, I drop names of podcasts not because I'm trying to be cool with them. It's like I actually like those podcasts, and I don't expect anybody to say mine. Don't even say my podcast. That's cool with me. But yeah, yours is pretty big. I know how many subscribers are on there. It's a lot. It might be the biggest one. I don't know.
I don't know.
You probably don't even know that.
I haven't really checked. I think it gets around 4,000 to 5,000 listens per episode.
Oh god, wow, that's a lot. Mine gets about 4,000 to 5,000.
I thought you were gonna stop before dozen.
yeah, my first couple, they were rough. Yeah, this one's rough too, but yeah, there's a couple. I think with all the beekeeping podcasts, you're not really missing much. There's, you know, there's like a morning zoo type one, and then the rest are more just very cookie cutters, you know, talking about almonds, or someone from a university will talk about mites almost every single one. And I can't usually get too far into one before I just have to hit the X on it.
I've found a lot of them end up being almost like a reading of like a beekeeping magazine, where it just ends up just treatments, and then some commercial stuff, and then, you know, it's all the same stuff over and over again. So there's very few beekeeping podcasts that I listen to, and I've tried a lot of them.
Currently, Mitch Baker's episode has 3,559 downloads.
Wow.
And Bruce's has 3,481.
Ooh. So yeah, mine's newer.
You're 80 behind. But yours is also 5 episodes younger, so that makes up for some of it.
All right, yeah. Hey, you know.
That's mine's cool. Episode 71. Add on to it.
Yeah. It was low management, by the way.
Oh, so you said you had some snide remarks for us. What do you got? Anything good, Solomon? Have you got any hate mail from anyone lately?
It's been very light the last week or so.
That's almost disappointing. I love the hate mail.
I haven't been called a Nazi or Hitler in, what was it, been 3 or 4 weeks?
Oh, wow. I've never been called that. Yeah, Mite Bomber is the main one I get called, but I'm cool with that now. I'm like, yeah, that's my show, too. That's fine with me. This class was something. Man, there was another part. Oh yeah, the speaker, I guess, I don't know how long he's had bees, probably 20 years or something, and he was telling the class how when the bees cap the brood cells, sometimes the wax is different colors. And I just kind of shook my head a little bit. Am I wrong to say that the bees do not cap the brood cells? And it's not wax?
It's a mix of, like, wax and pollen so that they can breathe through it.
But the bees put that on? I'm almost
it's not
99% sure the larva spins it.
I'm pretty sure the larva spins their own cocoon and then the bees cap over it.
Oh, okay. I would love to have an observation hive where I can just focus on one cell and try to catch that little sucker.
Oh,
capping his own cell.
That's what I'm going to do this year. My new thing is I have a 60-gallon hexagon aquarium.
Oh yeah, that's
and
right.
I'm going to put it on a stand in my living room, and I'm going to put a pipe out the top of it to outside, and I'm going to start a hive in there and just let them grow free comb in that aquarium. That was my new thing for the year.
You guys don't have inspectors bugging you out there in Oregon, do you?
As far as I'm aware, our beekeeping laws and regulations are something about expired or repealed and hadn't been replaced yet or something like that. So as far as I'm aware, there's functionally nothing.
I got to move out there. When we went to the natural beekeeping conference, everybody was from Oregon, it seemed like it. It seemed, and I was just like, I wish somebody would kidnap me and take me over there.
There were
all
the
cool people. Huh?
There were a few.
I thought there was quite almost everybody. Oh, I'm from Oregon. I was like, wow. And not too far from each other.
A lot of people up in Portland and Eugene, yeah.
Seems to be a pretty nice place for keeping bees. I mean, treatment-free beekeepers up there. Here, you know, you really hear it here constantly about treating. I mean, I don't know.
He didn't harass me too hard when he came in and went through mine.
He, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. My thing is I just want them to just do just the job they're supposed to do, really. And I even said, you're here to check for American foul brood. Check for American foul brood. We don't really have to talk that much. And I was quickly corrected. No, well, I check for European foul brood, and I do a mite shake, and I'll do this and that. And I was like, but I don't want any of that stuff, so just stick to that. And I guess that might have put us off on a wrong foot for the next three visits, because I was just, it's just as soon as that door closes, this gotta go, that gotta go. It was stressful, but it should be much better this time. I got rid of my spool colony, and everything else would be nice and neat and easy to go through.
Did you ever open it up and see what it looked like inside?
No, because it has all that wire on the outside, and I know that once it collapses, all that wire is going to spring everywhere and cause a big mess and be hard to put back together.
See, you pawned it off.
That was a failure to requeen after a swarm, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what I think it was, because it just actually, they swarmed, but I think they absconded because there was a cluster hanging in a nearby tree. And the activity went down almost all the way that same day. There was almost nothing there, so I think they just got robbed after that.
Hey, this is pretty cool. I'm looking out my back window, and the way my backyard is set up, I've got the hives at the far end of the yard, about, I don't know, 150 feet away from the house. And I can see the bees flying from the hives, and they come up at like a 15-degree angle and go over the top of the house. It's kind of cool because the way the sun is in the late afternoon right here.
Nice.
It's pretty sweet.
Oh, yeah. It's still sunny over there. Here it's pitch black.
It's getting to be dark where y'all are.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to have a hive right on the side of my garage that was pointed directly at my neighbor's house that was like maybe 10 feet away. And he knew about it. He was cool with it. But I used to go out there and watch them because it was in such a spot that they would either shoot directly across and out over my backyard, like almost like a flat trajectory, or they would tornado up and go over the garage. And it depended on where they were going for whatever forage they were getting. And watching that orientation flight in the afternoon, there would just be this huge like tornado of bees going up.
The ones that don't ascend quickly enough, they like come to the edge of the house and they do like one or two spirals to gain altitude, and then they keep going over.
I can never see where mine are going. They're all facing all different directions, and it's just like a constant buzz everywhere you walk here. Bees pinging off you in every direction. So the only cool thing I can tell is when...
So lucky.
When they found a...
I said, you're so lucky.
When they find a feeder or when somebody's getting robbed, you can really see them just come barreling out of one. And that happened my first year here when I didn't feed anybody. a couple just got robbed, and you could tell which ones are robbed. They just come barreling out, and then they're coming back so heavy. And that was cool to watch. I don't want to see it again, but that's the only flight pattern I could see on mine. So, Mitch, I'm just... Oh, man, I'll have to edit this part out. I just flat out ran out of shit to talk about. I'm like, what the hell do I ask here?
This is where I, like, stop talking and wait for my guest to get uncomfortable and say something.
Yeah, but, man, you start saying dumb shit. What the hell can we talk about? I'll get all this out of here. I don't care. I'll cut it out. I don't want to force it. I mean, if we're done, we're done.
Keep it in. This
yeah, I'll
is
keep it real. In. Shit, I don't care.
This is the real stuff.
But I'm like, on the way home, I was thinking, oh my God, I'm going to talk about this and this. I have all these great things. But I was driving, and then I'm like, I get here, and I'm like, and I get the recording going.
How are the bees blank. Over at the nursery doing?
Oh, good question. I had four there, and plus your empty box that was there. But when I went there the other day, the two big ones were flying like crazy, bringing in pollen. The nuke, I couldn't really tell what was going on. There were a couple bees coming in and out, but I couldn't tell if they were robbing. I didn't see pollen, but it's definitely two out of those four. And I had no hope in those things getting through the winter. And they did. I mean,
and you had to move them away from the greenhouses, didn't you? Aren't they a bit further up the hill towards the peak?
Yeah, they're moved over, and that was a real pain in the butt. But oh wait, no, what? I only had one there at first, so I took that one home, and then I brought those four over there. And that also brings up something else. Someone the other day was talking about how feeding is bad because you train your bees to, I guess, not forage or something, or you screw up their genetics because it selects for bees that don't forage or anything like that. And
I think he was trying to say that it selects for bees who come out of spring or come out of winter into spring too aggressively, so they're growing what forage they would be able to get naturally.
Yeah. The way I took it was kind of like the bees somehow adapt, so they become so in tune with that environment that they just know when things are going to bloom and you screw it up by feeding them. But the thing is, the bees that I put over there, which is probably 7 or 8 miles away, they're the exact same bees I have here. They're direct daughters of the exact bees that I keep here, and I never fed them, and they're very heavy, and they still can survive. Here, I have to feed them, not in the spring, but in the fall, because there's just too many here, and the landscape is totally different. I just don't buy it that feeding bees selects for them to not, especially if you're open feeding. I don't buy it because the next season or the very next split or swarm, your queens are going to get mated by anything, you know, anything around.
Right. Not,
all those bees aren't from this exact area. You know, they're flying miles away, different landscapes. And just to give you an idea where I live, on my property here, none of the daffodils are blooming. None of my bulbs are blooming. But if you just go right down the road about a quarter mile, daffodils everywhere. Tulips, everything's blooming. It changes that much in just not even a mile. So I don't buy it.
I mean, I think it is a real thing because, you know, whatever you do selects for something. I just don't think in our environments where we have such variety of things blooming through artificial planting, you know, tulips and daffodils and dandelions and, you know, but those real natural flows out in natural areas, I think that would be much more of a factor in those places. But where right. we are in, I don't know exactly where you guys live, but, you know, Bruce is semi-rural, I'm semi-rural, but there's plenty around. You know, if there's nothing but daffodils, there's still something out there. Daffodils provide quite a lot of pollen, it seems.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't mean that the daffodils were a food source. What I meant was just that the temperature and the climate is different, such that they're completely bloomed a quarter mile away. But in my yard, where I have thousands of a couple hundred daffodils, they're only sticking out of the ground 2 inches.
Mm.
Well, you know, they should be. Why are they not blooming? I mean, they're not gonna. Well,
and I mean, to add to that, I don't know if either. I think you ride motorcycle, Solomon, but I don't. I don't think Bruce does.
I rode a motorcycle once.
I know when I ride, like, if you so much as like go into a little dip and they're starting to cool down, that dip will get cold.
Yeah, you probably live in a microclimate. That's why you're a cooler microclimate. That's why your daffodils aren't blooming yet.
Yeah. But my maples, for some reason, bloom before a lot of people do. So, and also to respond to what you said, as far as the selection, for me, the number one thing I'm selecting for is survival with zero mite treatments. Beetles, I don't care about any other type of things. Even foraging, I really don't care about that because it changes so much from year to year, and bees can be moved all over the place. So the constant is always mites, you know, and mite bombs. So that's the main thing I concentrate on. If and plus, who knows if I got a guy a quarter mile away with bees and he might have an open feeder. You never know where your bees are going. You know, they yep. rob each other. I just think feeding is kind of, it's just, for me, it's distracting. I don't think it's selecting in a bad way. It's mainly the mites that I am selecting against, right? I mean, does that make sense at all?
I think all beekeeping is local. You know, where you guys are is a bit cooler of a climate than I am. You guys get a bit harder of a winter. So, you know, if you've got like the sort of typical Italian colony that never stops brooding over winter and never really goes into cluster and they burn up all their honey by the new year, then, you know, that's going to be a pretty quick self-selection.
Yeah, I had a couple like that, a couple of my deadouts. I couldn't believe how there wasn't a single cell of honey in the thing, even though I made sure most of them were pretty heavy. And then I had the usual cluster 3 inches away from honey, all the bees are dead. But yeah, so they did self-select, I think, if they didn't manage their stores right. But yeah, the forage can just be so variable any year.
I guess it's about time I start getting into my hives for the year, huh?
I'm thinking the same thing. I haven't gone in any of mine. I just come home from work and go, hey, they're flying.
Yeah, I went into one because I thought it was dead. Actually, twice, two different ones I thought were dead. And they just weren't flying on warm days. And I popped that lid. Oh, man, they lit me right up. And they were clustered nice and tight and alive, and it was a lot of them, but they just didn't want to fly. I didn't get it. But, yeah, I'm not pulling frames yet, unless I know they're dead so I can scrape them out.
So I looked back at our conversation, and my second critique of your podcast episode was, what is a Karen?
Oh, Karen. Mitch, what's a Karen? Come on.
A Karen is that lady at the store who is, even if something goes wrong and it's just absolutely minute, like absolutely has to make a huge deal out of it and talk to the manager.
With the haircut. Someone's like, I never heard of this. Yeah, Karen. I just thought it was like, okay, you know, there's the okay Karen or bye Felicia. It's just like another, I don't even know how I use that. I said, if you're just like a Karen type with with two hives, which there's nothing wrong with having two colonies.
No, we welcome Karens.
But, you know, the worry wart, you know, everything has to be perfect.
The type of person that tells you that you need to do it the way that they do it because theirs is right and yours is wrong.
Yeah, I try not to do that. I could care less what anybody does with their bees. I really don't care. I know that I do what I like to do, and I like to talk to people who do things my way, so we have something to talk about. I can't have a conversation with a group of people that just is constantly talking about different treatment methods, and it's like a whole different language, and I can't do it. I mean, I was talking to somebody, not really talking to them. They commented about their treatment regimen as a reply to one of my comments. Really saving the bees, because he... All messed up. And now Solomon's here. Oh, man.
Hello.
Hey, I was sitting there talking, and then all of a sudden I'm like, where the hell did these guys go? And it kicked me off.
Am I right, guys? Am I right? Guys?
What the hell was I talking about?
You were talking about you don't care about how other people keep bees, and you were about to go off on a tangent, and then it died.
Yeah. Oh, because I was saying, somebody told me that Oh, you're always preaching treatment-free beekeeping. It's like, I'm not preaching. I'm simply usually just defending myself or just saying what I do. I don't tell people what to do, or I'll let them know there's an option. You know, you don't have to absolutely do things a certain way. Though it's not preaching, so those gestures can you know, knock it right off.
But, jesters.
When I was running the meetings in our club, that was one of the hardest things that I found, was trying not to be preachy about how I personally keep bees. But the thing that I found the most frustrating was the treaters in the club did not feel the same way. It was all about, you need to do this and you need to do that, and this is the time to do this. And that was where I was, you know, I didn't want to be preachy. I didn't want to be, you know, my way is the only way to keep bees, but it works for me.
I've pretty much quarantined and self-isolated myself, so I don't really have to talk to beekeepers anymore.
Where's the button that you hit with the glass? But some of the feedback that I did get about, say, the Randy Oliver episode was that a lot of people felt the same way. The way he comes in and fast talks and just bulldozes everybody. So many people feel the exact same way, just are petrified to say anything about anyone. I don't know why. He's just a regular dude that keeps bees. I don't know how certain people suddenly become so well known and famous or whatever. For what? For making a bunch of charts, and I don't know.
You got yourself a website.
Yeah. I just wish I would have came up with, you know, that name. Because it sounds so science-y. Yeah. There's got to be something I can do. Because when you look at the title, you're like, yeah, well, God, this guy's going to know what he's talking about. And it's just the same stuff over and over again. Same thing everybody says.
Well, it's all marketing. It's always coming up with a good name and advertising it and get your name out there. You don't have to have a product. You don't have to know anything or do anything. You know, if you just got a, if you got a good Facebook page, you know, you can definitely get, you know, Gen Xers? Is that the Facebook age?
I think, or millennials or Gen Xers?
Millennials are kind of on the cusp. I'm kind of like the oldest millennial, and it seems like my people are like ambivalent about Facebook, and some of them are like leaving. But yeah, I don't know.
I don't know which one I am. I'm not a boomer, I know that.
It is interesting. I've looked at my demographics from my my podcast and YouTube channel, and I'm trying to pull them up right now. But my YouTube channel actually skews pretty young, which is cool.
I don't know what my, I gotta look at mine. Oh wait, I don't know if I have enough subs to
have get that kind, demographics. Kind of
analytics. Yeah. Come on, people. No, I don't want.
It takes time. I you know, in the first, what was it, 2 or 3 years that I had the YouTube channel, I only got up to like 700 subscribers. It wasn't until YouTube came on and said that anybody under 1,000 wasn't going to be able to monetize their videos anymore. And I started pushing it at that point. I was like, help me. I've got to get to 1,000. Can some people help me? And so,
I remember that.
Finally did get to 1,000. And once it got to that point, then it has grown pretty well since then.
Was that just kind of like the cusp for you where it kind of became itself growing rather than you having to push for it? Or?
I think that's just the point where I started taking it a little more seriously and started actually posting content regularly, because I had recorded a bunch of stuff at that point from conferences and things, and I just hadn't posted much of it. And so when I started actually posting it, then it started, you know, if you build it, they will come, I guess.
Well, I noticed that's a thing going on, at least on Facebook, a lot, is there's a lot of brand new YouTube channels, and people are just spamming every single group with all these videos, and they just keep it's kind of annoying. I mean, we try not to let people do that, you know, in the TF group, but I mean, it's got to be a treatment free themed channel, you know, talking about a relevant subject. But any other group anymore, it's just constantly, hey, come visit my page or my channel and like and subscribe. And it's like, wow, just so they can get to monetize it. Really, I think that's what it is. I don't know how much YouTubers make.
It depends on the channel, but the thing about monetizing right now is that YouTube doesn't let you monetize until you have to have 1,000 subscribers, and you have to have a certain number of views like every day or average or every month or something. It's got, like, there has to be some, you know, at least some traffic there continuously, or they won't let you monetize anything.
Yeah. I think at my rate, if YouTube is still around, I might make a couple dollars.
Ooh, I'm about to hit 5,000 subscribers. This is cool. I've got a bunch of videos too.
Rub it in.
I've got a bunch of videos that I haven't posted yet. Also, I need to get back. I've been so busy trying to get this house fixed up and build the greenhouse and stuff. I haven't really had any time to do anything else.
How big of a greenhouse are you building?
It's 20 by 150.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I kind of overstretched. It's my family motto is, if it's worth doing, it's worth overdoing. So that's kind of what that's all about.
Mine's the opposite, probably. If it's worth doing, try to find someone else to do it.
But, you know, I've been thinking a lot about YouTube lately, because I'm trying to figure out, like, how can I make my stuff so that people actually want to watch it? You know, because I've kind of felt like a lot of my videos are boring, and, you know, just as a personal thing, I want to produce good content. I want to produce useful stuff. I want to, but there's so many people who are like the how-to guy or the how-to right. girl. There's so many how-to channels. And I don't even really want to be the how-to person anymore. Cause you know, that's like feeding a fire that's, you know, you're never going to, there's always going to be somebody who's smarter than you. There's going to be somebody who's more talented, you know? So I'm sort of moving toward the place where I'm just trying to make good stuff. I just want to make good stuff, stuff that I want to watch, you know? I really don't care about likes and subscribes. I want to make good stuff that's
relevant entertainment that you might learn something from.
Right. Or
my favorite
also
ones are
in the
removals.
Sense of art. I want to make good art.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bruce.
I got to learn editing, but like my favorite channels, and it's no surprise how many subscribers they have, is like JP the B-Man and 628 Third Rooster. They just make the best videos ever. I mean, doing their removals and the whole process, and they're funny. And you got to watch those. I can't convince Solomon to watch those. They're really good. And I watched JP for a few years, my first few years of messing with bees, and I didn't even know that treatments were a thing because he never once mentioned them. He just shows you how to do cutouts. Not, he doesn't really show you step by step how to do it, but you can watch it and see. He makes it look extremely easy, but
he shows you how to do cutouts the same way this old house shows you how to build a house.
Yeah,
they make it look easy. And it's definitely not because I was, oh yeah, I know how to do it. I watch a million videos. It never goes that way.
Well, those how-to videos are useful if you're looking to learn how to something. Like there's this one guy about 3D printers that I don't know if I'm subscribed to him, but he's really good how-to videos, but they're boring as hell. You know, so when I want to learn how to do something, I'll go find the video that he did on how to do something, but I'm not going to watch it for entertainment because it's boring. Yeah. Whereas the ones that I really want to watch are the ones that are well done videos where they're just like, this is what I did. And, you know, there's that, the one that I really like is that, that Chinese girl that just cooks food and grows things and whatnot. I don't know if you've seen her.
Oh yeah.
But she's just like, does not care if you're there at all. She's just videoing
oh my
what she's
God.
Doing.
That's the one where she like has all kind of animals just running around, like cats and
yeah,
like a goat. And she just, everything that she grows is perfect. And then her grandmother always sits down and eats with her at the end.
And then like you'll hear squawking off screen and she'll come up with a dead duck.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I love that one. I see that her videos come up on Facebook and you'll look at the views and it'll be like 3 million. And then you look at when it was posted like 45 minutes ago and you're like, wow, holy shit.
Well, yeah. Some of her videos have upwards of 30 million views.
Yeah. Those are really,
when you were saying you need to learn how to edit, Bruce, all I was thinking of, if we tried to make a video, the one swarm we were trying to pull out of your tree there, it would have just been 2 hours of us throwing a rope over a tree branch.
Oh my God, that one. Are you talking about the one?
The up one the that's back like, of your yard.
Well, me and you worked on a bunch of them. I don't remember.
Well, we were trying to shake it out of the tree, and then we ended up hoisting up frames like 19 times. And
yeah, I know that first one I called you up, and we just gave up. And then the next day they flew down and landed on something lower, and I got them. But yeah, I think I remember that one. Or if we had a video of that one where me and you were trying to get those bees out of that fallen down tree.
Oh God.
And I got stung so bad. I went running up the road because I had black socks on and they all just went out my socks and stung the crap out of me.
That was the only time I've ever seen Bruce run from bees.
It was a jog. I have a black socks experience from D. Lesby's bees. And everybody had duct taped up everything because they're just murderous. And the duct tape, I had low top shoes on and I bent over or something and the duct tape split apart that was taped around my ankle and revealed my black sock. and just instantly 30 stings right there in that one spot on my ankle.
Wow. The one that Bruce sent Bruce running, I was trying to perfect my bee vacuum, and literally I had filled it up and I decided that I was going to crack this open and dump them into the box, rather than keep them in there, because I only had the one box to suck bees into. And literally as soon as I lifted the lid, it was like a carpet of bees on the front of me.
Was I there for that?
Yeah, I turned around because I think I just said a few curse words. I didn't get stung during that part, but I said a few curse words because it was just thousands of bees just flew up and carpeted the front of me.
Yeah, that was... I didn't like those bees that much. And yeah, that was a rough one. I think the chainsaw set them off and all the smoke, and we were trying to make them abscond. That wasn't working, and then that big piece of comb fell right on my feet, and that's just, yeah, that hurt.
Can we curse on this podcast?
Hell yeah. this is an episode right here. This is an outlier.
Well, people get, that's one of the things that people get upset about is like we police language because we want it to be available for kids and stuff, right? So my podcast has no cursing, and the TFB group has no cursing, and people think I'm like some sort of prude or something, and I'm like, no, it's not about me.
It's not about you, it's about the target.
It's about the audience.
Well, for me, like doing this, I don't want to just start cussing like crazy all over the place, but just the way I talk, I cuss once in a while, and that's just how it is. And I don't, it's fine if, you know, I can control it, but here I just, like the one where Craig was on, he's like, I forget what he said, some shit. And I said, oh man, that was the first ever cuss. But then I was like, screw it, who cares? It's just this isn't for kids. No kid is going to find this entertaining. And even like Solomon said to me the other day, this podcast is not an educational podcast, and I was cool with that.
Like, did I say that?
Yeah, and maybe you said it more in a nicer way. No, you said something like, oh, what the hell did you say? It was just something like, the style is different. You know, I just talk about whatever, and I'll criticize people if I feel like I have to, and it's, I forget what you called it, but you were like, it's not a strictly educational podcast. And I was like, yeah, that's true, because I don't even really like those. So why would I want to do one?
Right. Well, I mean, that's my favorite part of actually like beekeeping. It's not out there just by myself doing whatever. I mean, I enjoy that. But my favorite part's like heading over to your house and helping try to tip over a tree far enough to grab a swarm and stuff like that. Like the interacting with other people that are interested in the same things that I am. That's the funnest part.
Yeah, speaking of that, if you want to help me with some cutouts, I got about 10 of them lined up, and they're all bugging me. I told them last winter, I said, if they live, I'll come get them. You know, mid-April, I'll come get them. People started calling me in February when when we had a warm day. They're flying. I'm like, yeah. Are you going to come get them? I'm like, no, I'm not coming to get them right now. So I'm going to have to knock all those out. It's going to be fun, but man.
Let me know.
Yeah, we'll make some videos. I got to get my subscribers up.
I'll tell you what, one of the biggest things you can do to keep your YouTube channel going is just post a video once a week, same day. If you do that for a couple weeks in a row, you'll see the algorithm picks up on it and you'll get more traffic. All right.
Can you schedule posting? Like, can you upload and schedule when it goes up?
Yes.
Yeah, for me, I always want to rush to get it on. It's like, oh, I made this cool video. I just quick throw a little bit of editing on it that I finally learned how to do. And I just want to get it right out. I don't know why I'm so impatient. Even with this, like with this recording, if I wouldn't have to piece it all together and try to cut out a little bit of the goofiness, that was mostly me. I would already put this thing out before I go to bed tonight, but and it's going to take me a little bit to work on it.
Yeah, I've never really been good at editing mine. If I'm doing the conversation and something happens, I'll like put a note down that I need to fix something. But generally, I don't listen to them over again, and I don't want to hear my own voice. And
oh yeah.
So like, I just add the intro and the outro and publish it and be done with it. Otherwise, it'll just sit there, and we'll just totally forget about it for weeks and weeks.
Yeah, I'll have this bad boy out. I might even stay up.
When I first started, I would listen to it and literally like delete every little pause that was too long, and every and every just delete and edit the whole thing down. It used to take forever. I got over that after about 3 episodes.
Yeah, I spent 12, easily over 12 hours editing one a few episodes ago, and something happened with my editing where it shuffled everything, and I ended up having to pull it because it's just I took out every single and it was a lot. It was a lot of ums and pauses, so that sucked. But
I eventually go ahead.
No, it's just gonna be minimal editing.
I eventually came to the point where it's like nobody's paying me to do this. And honestly, when I listen to podcasts, there's some that are highly produced and edited, like a TV show or something. Mm-hmm. But the ones where it's a conversation, you know, where they just have like a guest or something every episode. As a sound person, I know at a certain point the conversation doesn't sound natural anymore. Because in a real conversation, you're going to have a second or two of dead airspace here and there. And, you know, for me, I like to maintain some of that sort of natural conversational flow.
Yeah. Yeah, I do like some of the highly produced ones, too.
Or there's one, like I listened to, what's that one called? It's a history podcast. It talks about like big scandals and stuff. American Scandal. Like if you listen to that guy's podcast, he never inhales. You never hear an inhalation. Like you never hear it. It's so finely produced. He never inhales.
Wow. Maybe he does it all on one breath. he just right before he hits the mic, he's just like.
One of my huge issues in recording is I will have thoughts and I will not be able to finish a thought before I inhale again. I'm doing it pretty well right now, but I will inhale and then inhale again and inhale again and inhale again. And after about 30 seconds, I'm so full of air, and yet all my air is, all the oxygen is gone. And so I have to lean away from the microphone and breathe out, because I just get so excited about what I'm saying, I forget to stop breathing in. And you know, anyway, go ahead.
You got me so self-conscious about my breathing now. I'm like suffocating over. I have no carbon dioxide.
At a certain point, you just got to let it go and be yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who knew that people breathe?
Oh, man. So anyway. All right, guys. I think we had a good time here. We probably should wrap it up. Got about an hour. I'm heading off to bed in a minute. Anything you guys want to plug here at the end? I got dozens of listeners just ready to visit whatever you got going on.
Well, I can't imagine any of your listeners don't already know about TFB and our stuff. Just a quick note, the Facebook group is Treatment Free Beekeepers, not beekeeping.
What the heck did I say? Oh, Treatment Free Beekeepers.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's just the Facebook group. Everything else is called Treatment Free Beekeeping.
All right. I should know that, right?
Yeah, you've been a moderator for how many years now?
I don't even know. Maybe two.
It's no big deal. It doesn't bother me either way. If somebody wants to, the funny thing is that people have started copycat groups. Like there's an actually another treatment free. But you want let's talk about them for a while.
Yeah.
The people that started the treatment free beekeepers, and then the reasonably treatment free beekeeping. Or
something. Oh God, you had to say that one.
It's like these are people who got mad at us because we don't want to talk about treatments or the one that the exact copycat one, treatment free beekeepers, started by this lawyer lady up in, I don't know, up in your neck of the woods. I was looking at the conversation the other day when I booted her. It's like she basically was being a jerk, and I told her to stop being a jerk, and she's like, fine, I'm starting my own group. And so she started she started an exact copycat group with the same name, and like I looked at it, she's like the one who posts almost everything in there, but it's only got a couple hundred members.
Yeah, and if you go to the other one, it's basically just, I don't know if people are just in denial or what the hell is going on, but there's literally links to vaporizers and it's just flat out, it's almost more treaty than just a regular backyard type group. They almost are worse than...
Oh, the reasonably treatment-free one?
Yeah. I mean, it's a joke. I went in there, I posted just one of my stupid memes, a little light joke about treating beekeepers, and dudes just started hammering me, like, and I was like, wow, what group is this? Why even... There's no such thing as reasonable. First of all, we're not unreasonable. So... It doesn't make sense to call a group a reasonably treatment-free group, but yeah, it's not. There's nothing treatment-free about it. None of them. Even another one that a good friend of mine started up. I really didn't want to start any trouble. I just was like, is this just like a regular group? And it is. I mean, and we talked about it. We're still friends, but it's just, I'm not even going to name it, but it's just like, it's a regular group.
Yeah.
There's no other treatment-free groups.
That's the thing, and I know who you're talking about. And he's just so concerned about not offending people, he doesn't want to set boundaries on what it is.
Yeah, screw that.
That's the wonderful thing about treatment-free beekeepers group is there's such a clean outline of what it is and what it's for that as long as you are willing to work within that boundary, if you don't actually truly believe in that boundary, but as long as you're just able to work in that boundary, it's so much easier to just take part.
Yeah, it's like be there, learn a little bit, but a lot of people, they're just not there to learn. They just can't take it after so much. They just can't take it, and they got to jump in with, well, you got to do your accounts, and you got to do... And then, you know, you would treat your dog or your cat or something like that. Yeah, they can't help themselves. So, yeah, you can be there. Just be quiet. Like, don't say anything. And that's because it's the only group where we just want to be, let to do our thing.
That's exactly the purpose of it and always has been. Just leave us alone, please. We just want to do our thing.
And there's 500 other groups. Like, go badger people over there. Yeah, it's funny. So, well, at least we got all that off our chest. We're talking about moderation on the podcast. And I booted this other broad the other day. No, I
don't know. Don't say broad.
So, yeah, oh, God, here we go. I always say that. I say that to everybody. Everybody knows I'm joking around. I call everybody that.
It's kind of funny. All right. I got yelled at one time for calling girls chicks. It's like, I grew up in Oregon, you know. I'm like half a mile from California. Like, this is how we talk.
If you knew some of the offensive things I say directly to people offended by the things that I say, and they just know how I am, I can't even say I'm on here. But, you know, it's just... I don't know why.
This is my podcast, and I can't even say it on here.
Yeah, I can't say it on here, but I'll just straight walk into a whole, you know, my friend, people, you know, so I'll say my thing. No one else can say that stuff, but anyway. All right, let's wrap this bad boy up now. But I was, I'm happy you guys came on. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
We got to get together and do this again sometime.
My pleasure.
I'm going to have a nice list of topics for us to, so we actually talk about a good amount of bees. All right. Yeah. So take it easy, Mitch.
Adios.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. So now we can cut it there when I cut the end off. But no, I actually do have to get up at 3 o'clock for work.
Do you, I recorded everything so I can send that to you if you want to have like a backup or something to.
Yeah. Thank goodness. Yeah. Because I think when it booted me off, I think it did not back up that first part. It just straight up kicked me off.
Uh-oh.
So that would be cool if you did, you know, unless I have it.
Check. Is this still working? Okay. Barely.
I can hear you. I'll look for it. But all right, guys. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right.
See you, Bruce.
See you.
Bye, Saul.
Bye.